Hey, what's up, everybody? Tom Curran's Patriots Talk Podcast. I'm Tom Curran. That's Phil Perry. We, of course, have Matt Cassel with us. We got a ton to get to this week. Matt's reaction to Nick Caserio heading out of town. We got playoff predictions, and we got Patriots superlatives. Plus, there's a little bit of scuttlebutt about Deshaun Watson. Legit? Not legit? We'll get into that. Right up. Hey guys!
What up, buddy?
How you doing? Is this our last dance with you, Matt?
You know, I'm coming back. I'm not just gonna sit out and just watch you guys do your podcast all the time. But yes, it is.
What happened to your nose, guys? If you're listening, which many of you are, because it's a podcast, he's got a looks like a birthmark on the bridge of his nose.
Right. You know, sometimes when your younger brother comes out and he wants to establish dominance, and he's been taking a bunch of, you know, martial arts class, and he wanted to tap me out, but you know, I'm never gonna say I'm gonna let him tap me out. He's my younger brother. So of course at 12:20 on New Year's Day, I guess it would be 12:20 a.m. we decided to have a little wrestling match. His elbow accidentally caught my nose,
but you should see the other guy
ringing in the new year like that, Phil, huh?
But it was friendly. It was all love, man. It was all love.
Listen, 2020 was a hard year. Yeah. You want to get 2021 off right with a win. Mm-hmm. It just sounds like maybe you were on the wrong end of it, though.
No. I would say I gave a great effort, and I would say it was a stalemate. I mean, stalemate. Was that what you say?
I will
not admit defeat. I definitely didn't lose.
All right. Is there any video? It's got to be video.
No, thank God there's not.
That's weird. There's nothing that doesn't have video in 2021, which is part of the reason we see so much ridiculousness around the country. That's my opinion. Everything has to be recorded. If there were no phones, we wouldn't be where we are. Tom, no one comes to the podcast to hear that. Correct.
Leave your Steve Jobs takes it home. All right, dude.
Matt.
Yes, sir.
Nick Caserio heading to the Houston Texans, and there's a little bit of fallout with Deshaun Watson, allegedly, supposedly, probably, maybe. But before we get to Deshaun Watson, reaction to Nick heading out when there's a boatload of salary cap space and a compressed draft season with not a lot of access to prospects. Could this be a whack on the nose?
It could be a tough situation for him. Obviously, it was something that we discussed last year. He was possibly going to go to Houston, but that got kiblaunched by Bill Belichick. He said, you're not going. But then obviously this year with Jack Easterby, the connection there, he went there. He thought it was going to be a great, great marriage. And so he's going to go there and he's going to try to reestablish the Houston Texans. Now it's interesting because he goes there. They have no first round draft picks. Their salary cap situation is completely different. Whereas here, like you said, we have $60 million of cap space. He could have made, you know, put a stamp on things a little bit more in terms of developing this team for the future. However, you know, he's going there. It's probably for his future. It's the money that's involved, everything, and he'll do a good job. I mean, Nick's been around this program for, gosh, what, 20 years. So, and he's been not only in the coaching side, but obviously in player development and all that stuff as well. So he's well-versed in it. He understands it. He'll go out and he'll do a great job for that organization.
What's the better opportunity right now, Phil? New England or Houston?
Houston, you have a quarterback. And that is the one thing that, especially as a personnel guy, I think you could look at and say, okay, one big item on the list we've got checked off. Now, the rest of it's hard. They're already over the cap. If the cap goes down to 175 next year, they're already $17 or $18 million over that. So they're going to have to start lopping off salary, maybe some big names. Somebody like J.J. Watt, he's scheduled to make almost $18 million next year. None of it's guaranteed. So that's pretty easy savings right off the bat, but the guy's also been the face of your franchise. So immediately, if you're Nick Caserio, you have these PR minds that you're going to have to avoid when it comes to rebuilding this team because it's in such bad shape structurally outside of that quarterback spot. Matt mentioned the lack of draft picks. So it's a challenge for sure, but at least you have the quarterback there. And here you don't have that. Now, Tom, what you have there as well, if you're Nick Caserio, is you're the guy. You have the responsibility. Here, it's Bill's team. It's Bill's show. You are helping him along with that, obviously. You were his biggest help. You were his right-hand man as far as that goes. But in Houston, it's going to fall on your shoulders whether you succeed or whether you fail.
Matt, the attrition here in New England, which is Brian Flores, Matt Patricia, why did I just draw a blank? Everybody else. I mean, we've visited it enough.
Eric Mangini.
Nick, did you say Mangini? I don't have to.
Yeah, why not?
Oh, six. All right, fair enough. Mangini's gone. Romeo's gone. Charlie Weiss is gone.
All of them.
But when we look at the attrition here, if you are a player and you look at the coaching staff attrition and the scouting attrition, and then also look at the number of key free agents the team has up, if you're a guy who's under contract, are you wondering whether or not this team is heading in the right direction? And why is everybody else running for the exits?
Right. I think as a, from my experience at the quarterback position, the biggest key for me is the coaching staff, right? And the offensive coordinator, who's going to be calling plays, who's going to be help developing my skills. Are you going to surround me with the players that I need? But in terms of personnel, I don't know if players necessarily really think about the personnel decisions, because we know that Bill Belichick really kind of controls all those decisions. Ultimately, they have a plan in place. And so for a player though, you do look at who your offense coordinator is, who your defensive coordinator is, what players are trending in that direction. And so that those are things that I evaluated when I was a free agent, which was only a few times in my career, but I was looking at that in terms of, you know, how can I be successful in this program? Does this program fit my style of play? And also, do I think that they're going to be successful and put me in a position to where we can make the playoffs and make a run in the playoffs? And so those were all factors. And then obviously the other part, the almighty dollar, is always a big factor for a lot of these free agents that are going to be out there, or players that are going to possibly come here, is, are you going to pay me? Because at the end of the day, this is a business. And not only are you looking at coaching staff, system, how that fits, but it's the numbers, right? Because it's a finite time period in which you can make money, and mm-hmm. you're making good money. And so they want to capitalize on that as much as possible.
Phil, are the Patriots a less attractive locale right now than we would think because of the last 2 years and the number of people that they're seeing go out? And as a result, how will that impact their free agent shopping?
Well, here's why it's not less attractive at the most important job on your roster, is because it's open, you know, and guys want to play. Great so point. For somebody like Marcus Mariota, say, if, and he's under contract still with the Raiders, and he would probably have to be traded. But Sam Darnold, if he becomes free, if Jimmy Garoppolo for some reason becomes free, if any of these guys have their choice and you want to go start, there's one job that's going to be open, especially because they're not at the top of the draft either. So you're not looking at signing with this team and then having them go a month later in the draft and picking in the top three and bringing a kid in here who's going to be better than you, or better than you pretty quickly. So in that sense, I think it is pretty attractive. And Matt mentioned mm-hmm. the almighty dollar counts too. And the Patriots are going to have a lot of money to spend. The question is how aggressive there's that word again. We've been talking about that word this week, but how aggressive are they going to be in terms of pursuing these guys at the quarterback? And I think the receiver spot as well, because the best players at those spots get paid. And is Bill Belichick going to be willing to do that? That's a huge factor.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
One guy that we can talk about in the quarterback grouping, because his name is in the news today. Now, this is a little bit of fantasy land operation here. Deshaun Watson, who is, to me, one of the easily in the top five quarterbacks in the NFL, depends on your matchup, depends on the day, how high in that top five he is. Just signed a new contract with Houston. The Houston Texans are a team that espouses its political viewpoint broadly, and that is from the McNair family. And oftentimes that is in conflict with so many of the players, and we saw it. It's pretty well documented. Earlier this week, Deshaun Watson, after the presumed addition of Nick Caserio, tweeted cryptically, "Some things never change," or something like that. Many people ascribe that to being, oh, well, Watson's not happy there's a Patriots executive coming in after Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby, and he's already kind of intimated that he wants and will have a big voice in the head coach. but also the decision in Kenosha, Wisconsin to not prosecute the Jacob Blake shooting, the police officers involved, also occurred that day. There was never anything from Watson explaining which was which. So divining from the tweet that this was football related is hard to do. Mike Florio, friend of the program, in the family, said that he has heard from folks within the NFL that he has, that teammates of Deshaun Watson's have been spoken to by Deshaun about possibly requesting a trade. All that said, on this highly circumstantial, I would even say flimsy evidence, let us launch into a Deshaun Watson conversation. Welcome to Fantasyland. You can't trade that guy. He's not going anywhere, and he ain't coming here. Next, you guys, take it away.
I mean, if I'm Nick Caserio, I'm doing everything in my power to let him know that while he might have had a bad experience with Bill O'Brien, I don't know what the circumstances were. It seemed like at times they had a good relationship, and then other times there was their trials and tribulations and their adversities that they went through, right? And so maybe he wasn't as happy. And at the end of the day, it's his job as the GM now, who's going to be overlooking all the operational side of it, to go in, smooth things over, have a man-to-man conversation, sit down and make him feel comfortable and good about the direction in which the organization going, and at the same time give Deshaun Watson the feeling that he has a say and he has an understanding, he has input on the next head coach, because that's going to be the decision that ultimately impacts Deshaun Watson more than anything else, is who this next head coach is going to be, what kind of system they're going to be running, how much say is he going to have in it. He's proven that, and he's established himself enough, and obviously with his salary, he's the face of the franchise, so he has to feel comfortable in that role. And if there are any grumblings and he does have any problems with what's going on right now, he's got to voice that the minute they sit down, and they've got to hash it out. Otherwise, 100%. It will make for difficult circumstances.
You got to clear the air, right, Phil? I mean, if their political viewpoint or social justice viewpoint conflicts with yours so greatly that you are uncomfortable working there, you better broach that. And we're in a different place in time where people just are not blinders on, and I'm just going to work and I don't care where my place employs, how many sweatshop employees in some foreign country. People pay attention. And if Deshaun is paying attention and it's a argument against the place, which he probably should have thought of before he resigned, but Phil.
Well, Tom, I was just looking at his contract and he's under contract through 2025. So if that was a factor for him, you would think it would have been something that he would have factored in prior to making Houston his long-term home, but a lot has happened since then. And so maybe that is an issue for me. I could understand if he's worried about where the offense is headed. I mean, Matt just talked about how much a quarterback cares about the system and who the offensive coordinator is and who's going to be your play caller. That's going to matter to him. And if he sees Nick Caserio come in and he sees Jack Easterby still there, is he worried? Oh boy, this is just going to be Bill O'Brien all over again. And we know how that went. It didn't go well enough for me. Then I would understand that. But yes, sit down with him, clear the air. You can make this better around him relatively quickly, honestly. Even though his contract is massive, the cap hits aren't massive until 2022. They shoot from 16 next year to 40.4 in 22, 42.4 in 23. Maybe you get some restructures in there to knock those things down. But you can release J.J. Watt, who I just mentioned. You can release Brandon Cooks. None of his money for next year is guaranteed. You can release David Johnson, who's part of that disaster trade for DeAndre Hopkins. That's another $7 million off your books. All of a sudden, you're not even in the red anymore.
Right.
You have some money to play with, and there are some receivers available. So it's not a great spot to be, but you could come up with a plan that makes him feel better about this. Let me play devil's advocate for 1 second.
I just want to do this. Talking on the trade talk, what's the feasibility of trading him? How much would
it cost? This is me playing devil's advocate. You ready?
Goody.
You ready to give up four first round picks? Four first rounders for Deshaun Watson. You ready?
Yep.
You are.
How much does it cost?
That might be how much it costs.
Okay, but how much will it cost me to pay him in 2021? What's his salary that I'm assuming? What's his salary?
2021 salary is not much because it's just the end of his rookie deal. Essentially, he's 10.5 base salary for next year. 2022, you start getting into $35 million guaranteed for 2022, and that's his base salary for 2022. Ooh. For 2023, the salary is $20 million. His roster bonus is $17 million. His prorated bonus, his signing bonus, which you wouldn't have to deal with for 2023, is only $5 million. So it's a lot of money, okay? You're talking over $30 million the next couple of years if you trade for him, all right? So cap hits over $30 million if you trade for him. And you're also talking about, I would think, this is just me, there's basically no precedent for this, right? A quarterback, young quarterback in the middle of a really good, you could make the argument he was the second best quarterback in the NFL.
Can I just hit you with this? This is the ender. Going over the cap right now. Dead money. If he is traded before June 1st.
It's a lot.
$21 million. And then in 2022, it's another $16 million. Unless I'm friggin' wrong, or is that...
No, I think it accelerates. So I think once you trade him, if you beat that 21, then you're done.
Obviously, the salaries won't hit him. You're right, but it's guaranteed salary, Phil. It's a $35 million guaranteed salary.
So it's a ton. But here's the thing. This is why
it costs.
It would be almost impossible. Think about what Khalil Mack got in a trade. Think about Jamal Adams.
Too much to trade him.
Tom, leave that out of it for 1 second. These guys that are players that are half as valuable, less than half as valuable as Deshaun Watson, just commanded 2 first-round picks. Are you ready to give up your draft for the next 4 to 5 years for your quarterback?
Well, the reason I fixate on Houston first is before we talk about how much somebody will pay for him, it's whether or not the person can even afford to sell it. Houston can't. So we're pissing up a rope with this conversation.
I mean, Patriots just let Brady go for 13 and a half. 21.6 isn't, you know, over the next. The 35 you're talking about is going to the team that deals for him for 2022.
So it's just 21.6.
It looks like it's 20. If he gets traded over before the season, it's 21.6 because then there's roster bonuses that would vest, but he's not on the roster. You can watch that
gray right out of your hair almost with releasing J.J. Watt, but now you've released J.J. Watt and Deshaun Watson, and ooh, I would rather go to the rodeo.
It's making a splash to a first-time GM coming in and taking over and releasing J.J. Watt and Deshaun Watson. We're starting real fresh. That might create
wipe the board clean.
So much for that six-year contract.
But could you sell it to, say, look at the Dolphins right now. This is, again, me playing devil's advocate. I know you're rolling your eyes.
No,
if you're the Dolphins, you don't believe in Tua. I wouldn't. Maybe they do. You're willing to trade Tua, who's a top five pick last year. You're number three. You trade them back their pick, which is number three overall, which would allow them to draft a very good quarterback. And you trade them, and they have another first in the middle of the first round this year. Maybe even get another future first. And now all of a sudden, Miami, which is a pretty good team outside of the quarterback position, gets a bona fide franchise guy right away, and the Texans can start fresh with Zach Wilson or Justin Fields and build around that guy. They get their pick back. And they kind of are freeing themselves up financially. You're clearing the decks, and you're really truly starting over. Wow. Anybody like that plan?
I don't know. I think
for
it's
Miami,
just,
I do.
We enter into the conversation with such flimsy and almost counterfeit motives that I'm sorry that we even did it.
Well, I can tell just by your tone.
Yeah, I can tell you're just
really set you off there. Listen, this is our guy. Defeated. This is Mike Florio. Mike Florio is hearing this somewhere. He hears a lot of things. He doesn't write up everything he hears.
No, he hears a lot of things, but we all hear a lot of things when it rises to the level of, if I walk past the TV and hear this being discussed, I think it's, well, those guys on TV are talking about this. I wonder if this is about to happen. And we end up, again, talking about something that is really flimsily entered into.
Let's get Florio on the horn then.
I'll get him on the blower. Well, let's he would say accurately his vantage point. Why would I not talk about it? I cover the NFL. Half of this is fantasy land. It's entertainment. Well, and I'm like, well, we're also not the New York Times. Not the New York Times is what the New York Times was, but we got to have a level of fact to the story. And if Mike has talked to people who have talked to Deshaun Watson or heard that Deshaun Watson said that, well, then that's one thing. But again,
we're just having fun here. It's okay.
I don't think it's fun, Phil.
It's fun for me. I just had a lot of fun.
All right.
Think about all those draft picks. Oof. Yeah. I just got a little.
Good scenario.
Wow. Little light headed, are you? All right. Felger and Maz did this the other day with Greg Bedard, who they had on. I thought it was fun. We're lifting the hell out of it. Not like this isn't the first time it's ever been done, but Patriots superlative, some of their bests and worsts. Let's launch right now. Cam Newton's best play and his worst play. Fellas, give it to me.
Honestly, I think Cam played his best probably the last game of the season. You know, he was 21 for 30, 242, three touchdowns, 11 rushes for 79 yards. I mean, he played a complete game, and I know that.
Which play did you like?
Which what?
Which play?
Which single play?
Oh, single play? The single play that I liked was in that game when he ran the 49-yard run in the first series of that game. That was an explosive play that we hadn't seen a ton of in Cam. We've seen him rumbling, you know, the 10 yards, get down, you know, stuff his head in there on third down, red zone. But that was a play that he broke a few tackles, extended the play, stiff arm down the sideline, 49 plays. It was a huge play in the first drive of the game to set up a little bit of momentum. So I'd say that was – like vintage Cam, and we didn't see a lot of that.
I don't know why he's so mad at me. Phil?
He's angry. Yeah, no. I'm going with the Damir Bird touchdown deep down the field in Houston. You remember that one?
Yep.
Dime.
5 yards.
Great ball. Something that we rarely saw from him throughout the course of the year. But that to me is the best play probably because we saw so few of them. But Matt's right. There was some like step up, scramble around, make a throw like 15 yards down the field on a line in that Jets game to end the year that are probably right up there in terms of his best plays of the season.
Best play for Cam follows his worst play for me. His best play was that goofy ass scramble against the Arizona Cardinals on third down that he actually ended up picking up a 15-yard bogus flag on to set up the legend Nick Folk for a game winning field goal. His worst play came just prior with the pick that he threw in a critical high leverage situation. Boys, you give me your worst plays.
For me, the worst, Matt, is the fumble at the end of the Bills game, because it's a division game. The season still matters at that point. We know they're not a great team, but they're still fighting for something. And that one singular play really killed them. So that for me is the obvious one.
Yeah, that was huge and a huge moment against a division rival where you had an opportunity to win. I was going to go that route. But at the end of the day, when you look at his overall play, I mean, one of the plays that stuck out to me was in the San Francisco game, the third pick in that game, which he just wasn't reading coverage. It was as if he didn't even care. It was a post-safety defense. He throws it right to the safety in the middle of the field, and you're just going, what in the world is going on at the quarterback position? And you're, you know, as a quarterback, you sit there and watch, and you go through the progressions, and you give them the benefit of the doubt on some of these. You don't know always the read that he's told to go through, but that one was just him forcing it. And it was just an absolute ill-advised throw.
Patriots best win of 2021. And then their worst win. I mean, loss.
Okay, to me, the best win was the Ravens game. I mean, the because of the Ravens, who they are, the way that they can run the football, they held them to 115 yards rushing, which is still decent, but this is a team that averages over 170 yards a game, right? And I know that the conditions were what they were, but at the same time, they needed a win, and they went out against a really good football team and Lamar Jackson and got a win, and that was huge. And I think for them, that gave them a lot of confidence at that point in the season, and it helped get them kind of going in the right direction.
That to me is probably the obvious one looking back on it. I think everybody felt really good about what they would be able to do based on that win alone. And then they go to Houston and Deshaun Watson does what he does. But Tom, I'll suggest the Raiders game at home, because to me, that was kind of the definition of how they had to win games. Like Cam Newton didn't play well in that game. They still put up 36 points. They still held the Raiders, which was a borderline playoff team with a pretty good offense, to 20. So that to me was a little bit more definitive of who they were and who they had to be. And it came as early as week 3. And then we know after that, the wheels kind of came off with COVID and the Chiefs and all that stuff.
I like best win was the opener, really, against Miami. I thought that was 15 carries, 75 yards, showing that we're ready to go. We're going to build some momentum here, and we don't mind that Tom Brady left. And you know what? We're going to finish 12-4, and you guys are going to get used to Cam as your franchise quarterback. All right, now worst loss, Philly.
For me, it's that Rams game, and it didn't officially take you out of playoff contention, but it just about did. And you were feeling so good about being out in LA. You're going to stay there for the full week. the Rams actually were the ones who had to travel for that game. And if you could beat the Rams, who had a really good defense, but you had the plan to beat them in the Super Bowl just a couple of years ago, you were really starting to build something. Your playoff chances were looking pretty good. And they just get rolled by Sean McVay and that offense. And it started from the very beginning. They were not ready. And that, to me, is the one that was the biggest gut punch of the year.
Yeah, to me, one of them was the Denver Bronco game, obviously. Like, well, you come out and you think this is an opponent we can go out, get after. Cam came back, and you think that they're going to pick up where they left off. And the fact of the matter is the Denver Broncos just controlled the line of scrimmage the entire day. They couldn't get the run game going. The pass game was just out of sorts. And from a defensive standpoint, they gave up just enough big plays, and they ended up losing that game. But that's a momentum builder in the middle of the season when Cam comes back to get your momentum going in the right way. I mean, it wasn't a devastating loss, but the other one that I point to, you know what,
I'm gonna be hot.
I'm good with the Denver Broncos.
All right, I hated the San Francisco loss, but I really hated the Buffalo loss.
I was gonna say the second one,
evisceration. They could have put up 50 if they decided to. And when you saw Jarrett Stidham throwing it sideways slash backwards, it wasn't tipped, he fumbled it. That explained to you how far after 15 weeks they had not come with that particular player. So to me, it's the Buffalo Bills loss. All right, let's go rapid fire because I want to hit the playoff matchups and get some predictions. But last one we'll do here is Bill Belichick's best moment and worst moment. I'm going to give you my best moment, and that is his handling of COVID and the way that he had his players' backs and really, I think, bought an immense amount of goodwill from those players by putting himself out there. His worst moment to me was his dissembling over why the Patriots are where they are and pointing to things as if they were beyond his control and sidestepping the shortcomings that the team has had in roster building. Phil, Matt?
Yeah, I'll go. I mean, I'll second you on the COVID handling. When it comes to the football stuff itself, that Chargers game has to be kind of his shining moment for that season because, again, their offense was what it was. They put up 45 on defense and special teams and, you know, getting blood from a stone, as Tom likes to say. So coaching-wise, I would say that's probably his shining moment. His worst, Matt, I would say are just the series of moments where they did not have enough football players on the field to play defense. It happened several times. And it's just – I can't remember it happening – hardly ever under this coaching staff and under Bill Belichick. And it happened multiple times. It was happening late into the season. It happened in San Francisco. It happened. The most recent one was against the Bills. It was a fourth down play and they only had 10 guys on the field. It happened at Buffalo too. So that to me just speaks to difficulty preparing this year.
For my best moment, I think I'm just going to piggyback off Tom. I mean, to be honest, it's been a frustrating year, obviously, but at the same time, the way that he handled COVID, the situation, everything that took place with his team, and he's always had that next man up mentality. At the same time, he knew that he was putting his players first in these situations. He wasn't going to risk their health, and he did a tremendous job of managing that situation throughout the course of the season, but particularly when they did have that outbreak. And then in terms of just the lowest moment, I mean, look, there's always frustration on the sideline, but when he grabbed that phone and threw that phone down and he was just like so upset, it basically summed up the season of nobody's on the same page. Even Ernie Adams upstairs is telling them bad information and they can't get the call right. I mean, those types of situations happen, but at the same time, that just kind of was it summed it all up for me.
Isn't it wild to think like in what he's 68 and he's still whipping phones. It's not a lot of industries that you can have 68-year-old guys whipping phones and clipboards. It's coaching. It's sports. That's why we love it. All right, ladies and gentlemen. Last thing we want to get to before we jump out of here is the playoffs. Rolling quick through the matchups. You got your Saturday matchups with TFB playing against the WFT. That's on a Saturday night. First matchup of the day, though, is Indianapolis Colts at Buffalo Bills. Bills are favored by 6.5. Your total is 51. I'm taking Indy to cover that mess. And I think the most pressure for any team right now could be on Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills. Matt? your team.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, they're obviously one of the hottest teams in football, the way that they finished the year and everything that they've got going on the offensive side of the ball, the year that Josh Allen had, Stephon Diggs, all the weapons that they have with John Brown and Cole Beasley, Knox, the running back situation. Their defense is obviously playing a lot better, but they're going up against a team that's 11-5 with the Colts that are well-balanced. Like, they can beat you with not only their defense, which is a top 10 defense. The only place that they really struggle is the pass game. But then you go offensively, Jonathan Taylor has been tremendous down the stretch. He just, I mean, his average over these last however many weeks since like week 11 is like over six yards a carry. So if they can run the ball, establish it, take it out of their hands, the defense plays solid. But also both of these teams are good on special teams. At the end of the day, though, I do think the Buffalo Bills, the way that they're playing, the confidence that they've had, they showed it week in and week out. They've won 9 of the last 10 games. The one that they lost was against the Arizona Cardinals on the Hail Mary.
Give me the Bills to win and to cover. Better quarterback, better coach in Buffalo. I think that – no crowd, but I think that matters. Give me the Bills.
Rams, Seattle's your 440 game. Seahawks minus 4. Your total's 42.5. You might not have Jared Goff. Boy, I still think that the Rams could pull this off. I'd stay away from this game if I was gambling, but I would say Seattle will prevail.
You know what? I'm going to go opposite direction. I'm going to say the Rams and that defense and what they're able to do. I mean, they're the number one ranked defense in the league, and they're outstanding. I think that they'll keep them in, even if John Wolford is playing. He showed a little bit last week, Ooh. And it might be a little bit different. But, I mean, the quarterback design runs, they in Seattle might be without Jamal Adams and also their starting defensive tackle. So, with that all being said, I'm going to go with the Rams because it's going to be a tight game. Jalen Ramsey's going to shut down DK Metcalf. Here we go, baby. Rams.
Isn't it amazing what this line says about Jared Goff? Like, the fact that Wolford could be playing and it's still only, is it 3.5 right now? I just don't think anybody respects Jared Goff, number one overall pick. I'm going to take the Rams as well. Seahawks not trending in the right direction offensively. They are not as pass happy as they were. Russell Wilson's not playing as well as he was early in the season. I'll take the Rams. Give me the 3.5.
Bucks. WFT. 8 p.m. Tom Brady in his first playoff game with a new team. Bucks are giving 8. Total is 45. I don't know how Washington scores. I'm actually going to say under and Bucks. It could be an ass thrashing.
I agree with you. I mean, the Bucks, the way that they ended the year, 4 straight wins, the way Tom's playing, 12 touchdowns, 1 interception. I mean, he's been outstanding. And then you look at that defense. A lot of people only talk about the offense, but the Bucks defense is outstanding. And when you look at Washington's offense, while their defense is outstanding with the 5 tremendous pass rushers led by Chase Young and Montez Sweat, I mean, at the end of the day, though, they've got to produce points. And without Alex Smith possibly not playing, I mean, I don't see how they score a lot of points.
This is 3 guys all feeling the same way about a game. Just tells you we spent a lot of time together. We're all feeding off of each other, which I can appreciate. But I would say this. Like, I think the Bucs could have a hard time scoring, too. I really like that front. And that kind of front has given Tom Brady problems in the past. I mean, it's a little reminiscent of what the Giants had with 4 defensive ends on the field, guys that can get up the field, that can pressure quickly. And Tom Brady under pressure has not been very good this year. The last couple of weeks, he has not been under pressure. The last time he was really consistently under pressure was before their bye, and I believe he had 2 consecutive games leading into that bye with multiple picks. That was against the Rams, and it was against the – can't remember right now, but it doesn't matter. Maybe it was New Orleans. Yeah, I know he had a multi-pick game in there. Anyway, I'm just saying 8's not enough for me to go football team, but if it ever got to 9 or 10, I would be interested.
All right, folks, we cannot do Sunday's games. We have run out of time. We love you all very much, however. And I'm going to say thank you, Phil. Matt, you're not – you'll be back, right?
I'm here for you, buddy. Anytime. Right. Are you kidding me?
Come on.
Everybody, thank you very much. Enjoy this weekend's games. We will talk to you next week, Tuesday. Phil and I will be back at you. Bye.